podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump in and talk about the topic today, I'll get it out. I'm leaving that in. I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shoe machine on the market, bar none. They are awesome. They rock. Mention Coach Unplugged. They'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. We have a special, quote unquote, special going on right now where we're giving quarterly memberships. We're super excited about that. People seem excited about it. And then that maybe come in and join for 3 months and take a couple months off. I personally would never leave teachhoops.com, but you have that option. And it's great. So go over and check it out, teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Let's head off to the podcast.
Yeah, talk through some drills. So we'll actually use this because this has our fundamental drills that you'll see in a lot of our practices. So 5 minute shooting, I'll kind of bring up my whiteboard real quick. Okay. Very basic. You put 5 minutes on the clock. You get two balls every other, and pretty much the first 5 minutes starts on the clock, comes around, guard comes around, gets a pass, makes a layup. Then the guard leaves the below the block, gets a pass from the next person, layup, rebound, and you continue to do that in the line for 30 seconds. Now, when the clock shows 4 minutes and 30 seconds, the whole line takes a step back, and now it's bank shots from the block.
They're basically curling. We do this kind of as a warm-up drill. Yeah.
Like, and then what's different about this is they have to hit a goal. So then it becomes in between the elbow and the block, which we call our mid-range. Then we get to our elbow shots, and then we get to our three-pointers. And then when you get to 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and that's kind of your halfway point, instead of asking them to, you know, move back down the way they came, they've got to then take the whole drill and drag it down to this side of the court all at one time.
Ooh, I like
that.
So then
they work their way back in from the three-point line back to elbow, back to mid-range, to bank shot, to layup. And what you'll find is the better teams don't catch energy only at the end when they see they have 80, and if they make all 20 layups, they can get 100. You know, they'll have that energy early on in the practice, early on in the drill, where the first 30 seconds they're trying to get 26 made layups in 30 seconds.
Okay.
So that's our 5 minute shooting.
How many are you trying to get?
So our goal at the beginning of the season, we set it at about 110.
Okay.
For us, and this season, I think the highest we got was 128.
And you change that. You change that as you see that they can reach specific goals. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see yourself like our team. From the previous coach and myself, like this year, we scored significantly more points per game. But you could see it develop over the course of the season in the drill. Like we were hitting 90 to 100 in the first month, and then this becomes so, you know, becomes such a ritual that, you know, come, you know, December, we're making 115 a practice, which is, and we'll restart it if we have to once or twice just to make sure that we get good reps out of it. But we always say the same thing: sprint to the spot, take your time on the shot. Sprint to your spot, take your time on the shot.
Well, I love that.
That's our emphasis on that. So then to kind of walk you through one of the tougher drills that we do, which is I stole it from Coach Mitch Oliver at Albertus, the men's coach. So this is called, we call it Albertus transition, because that's where I stole it from. So your yellow group over here, you take a group of five, and those are your offensive team, and you stick them at the half court, and you as a coach stand on the sideline with a ball.
Okay.
Then you take your defensive team in blue, put them across the foul line extended, and you put 8 seconds on your clock. Now, when I hit the go on the clock, or when our manager hits go, the 8 seconds begin to tick down. Everybody who's standing on the foul line extended has to run to the baseline as a team, touch the opposite baseline with two hands, and then come back. Now, it doesn't matter when that 8 second expires. Whenever that 8 seconds expires, the coach passes the ball to somebody at the half court, and they can take off and transition regardless of where their defenders are in the sprint back to the cross half court. And what you'll find is the first time you do the drill, everybody will sprint down and you know, halfway down the court on their way back up, they see they got 3 seconds, so they'll start yelling out, oh, I got so-and-so, I got her, yeah. I got her. But that never works once you've done the drill 3 or 4 times because you're exhausted. So two girls might be getting back and need to pick up different people. So what I've learned is, you know,
so they got to move because they're going from free throw line to the other baseline and then trying to get to the half court. So they're going, you know, over a full length of, I mean, yeah, that's crazy.
It has a lot of intensity to it, but it forces them to talk about, like, pick up ball first. You know, one of the things actually that I was lucky enough, we were talking about it yesterday, and I'm sure that I'm going to use it now, is the Milwaukee Bucks do this thing called Find Most Dangerous, which is what they call FMD. So who is that person? So once you pick up the ball, your next job is to pick up your Find Most Dangerous. So who's the most dangerous player on the floor that's not guarded? And then for us, obviously, you know, most coaches will say, you know, last person back, go pick up something on the weak side so that you can cover it.
I think for high school coaches or youth coaches, that's probably even bigger because, you know, in the NBA, there's more guys that are dangerous. As you move down, it's like stop ball and then find their guy or gal. Like there's usually one on the court that's going to kill you. Yeah, I love that.
So those are like two of the drills that are staples of what we do because I kind of talked about transition defense and offense, and I talked about shooting. You know, I have a ton of other drills. The other one that I brought to share with you was so we like to do a lot of live situational stuff early on in the season.
Okay.
And, I brought 4 examples. I'm going to bring them up. These are what we call, and I'll walk you through them, but these are what we call our live cards. So there's a stack of index cards on the table every practice, and there's about 100 of them, and every index card has a different situation written on it: time remaining, quarter, timeouts, fouls.
My stack's about this big. It's crazy. I don't want to know what's in the stack, too. Yeah.
So we take that and at the end of practice, depending on how much time we dedicate to live scenarios outside of our regular live work, I'll say to one of the players, please pick a live card. So they'll pick it and they'll read it out. So for this one, you have blue team 61, white score 60. There's 1 minute left in the one minute 30 left in the fourth quarter. You know, white's down one. They got 2:30s. They're in a man-to-man full court press with 1 foul to give, and they're inbounding the ball.
Right.
Blue, who's up one, has no timeouts. They're in a man-to-man half, and they have no fouls to give. And then we put that situation up on the scoreboard, and we play it out.
Yeah, we'll do. And we'll do also. We'll even add to things that Coach has on here. We'll say whether there's bonus or not bonus. We'll talk about on our cards. We actually have who's in foul trouble, who's not in foul trouble. You can make these cards as specific as you want. What I tell, and it's fun, I have a bunch that are typed up, but coaches is written out. Mine are on index cards because when my kids were little, I was just basically, that's what I would just sit there when I was waiting at gymnastics class, and I would just write out different examples. And that's how I got my cards. It's like everyone wastes time. Shoot, half of us are wasting time watching Netflix. So right. When you're sitting there, you can make these cards up. You all know different situations. But I love that. Yeah.
So you make a great point. And so I just think a different one. So just a more unique card, obviously, because the rest of them are similar to end of games. But this is one that we use situationally, which is our time remaining. And this is second quarter. So there's 6 minutes left in the second quarter. And this index card shows that blue is up by 11 with 2 timeouts left, man-to-man. They're in the bonus, and they're pressing in a 1-2-2-3 quarter, while white is down 11 with 1:30 in a man-to-man, 3 fouls to give, and they've been pressing full court man-to-man. And so we don't – sometimes we'll coach, but a lot of times we ask the teams to coach themselves through the scenario. So we'll tell them, if you draw this card, you know, they'll say to me, well, what are we supposed to do, coach? We're supposed to play 3 quarters? No. I want you to cut this game to a 4-point game at the end of the second quarter. So right. I want to be within 4. Doesn't matter to me whether it's 32-28 or it's 42-38. Just get this game to a 4-point game in 6 minutes. So they'll focus on that goal, which will change up a little bit of that whole end of game competitive edge versus the we've got to have the mentality that we can come back from anything. And we'll be able to refer to this in timeouts. You know,
right.
We'll be in a game down 12, and I'll say, listen, we have been practicing cutting leads in four-minute segments. This is exactly what you need to do now. You coach yourselves to do it by yourself without my help. Now I'm here to help you. You know, let's get it done and try and cut this down. So that's
a couple things. You have a blue and a white. Are one of them like your starting group or non-starting group?
And usually white is our starters.
Okay. And do you ever have white do stuff that you're not going to normally do? Like, let's say you're a man team and they're all of a sudden in a zone. I mean, are you putting things in your cards that only you do? Or are you putting...
That's an interesting question. I think a lot of the stuff that you'll see is stuff that we do, but we do have cards in there that'll ask them to like get into a 3-2 just because I want to challenge them to try and figure out new things by themselves. So there are some cards in there that'll, you know, they're in a 1-2-1-1, which we never run. And their response will be like, what are we supposed to do with this?
Right.
And it's more of just, I'm not looking for you to be perfect, you know, or as good as you are at some of the other situations. I'm looking for you guys to navigate through this together because situationally maybe you'll learn something about your team. Maybe they'll just really play a 3-2 well together and coach themselves through it. You kind of get to see the more vocal leaders in that process. So, you know, as for drills and that kind of stuff, that's kind of some of the stuff we do. And I figured I would bring here to share. Oh,
I love
today.
That. I love that.
And then just one last thing we do two drills. One, I think everybody does perfect defense, which is we put 30 seconds on the shot clock. Obviously, any mistake, not fouls necessarily. It's more, did someone beat you to the lane? Were you one pass away? You know, the whistles go off very quickly. You've got to legitimately be perfect. So whatever your principles are as a defensive team, you know, no lane penetration, you know, fronting the post. You know, if someone doesn't do that for a split second, you reset the shot clock to 30. And then the other thing we do is we do this. It's a very relaxed, but it's called pressure free throws, where we stick the whole team on the free throw line, on the baseline or around the free throw line. And I tell them that you're up 5 with, you know, 6 free throws to go. And if you make a free throw, it's +1. If you miss a free throw, it's -1. And everybody's got to go through or however many shots I allow them to take. So I'll say it's a tie game, guys. Everybody's got to take 2 free throws. Tie game. If you lose, we're going up and back. And if you make it, you go up a point, miss it. That. Now your team is losing. So we do that a lot.
And when do you do that in practice? When do you do that in practice? You do it at the end? Do you do it? When do you do that?
We'll most of the time, to be honest with you, we'll do it towards the end of practice, but we will do it if we're losing focus to regain the team to like lock in and say, hey, quick pressure free throws. Let's go. We're down by 5. You know, everybody's getting 2
shots. So that's a good thing. Do you have any tidbits for refocusing your team? I love that question. That just popped in my head. I love that. Do you have anything that you specifically do?
We have a couple things that we do to refocus. I give my captains 2 timeouts. So they're allowed 2 timeouts of practice. So if they feel like things are going south before I start to, you know, feel like they are, they can call a timeout. Coaches have to step off the court. It's their court for 60 seconds or 30 seconds, depending on what they want. And we'll let them talk it over. And, you know, that's just something I've done to kind of build camaraderie. I'm sure it's not original, but I know that it for us.
No, I mean, here's what I've started to do and I don't do this every day, but I actually run practice like a game. So we have a pregame, you know how you have pregame warm up, you have a pregame. We play halves in Wisconsin. So I have a first half, then I have a halftime where it's more like, what do you do at halftime? It's more cerebral. You're talking about it, get your water break. Then we do the second half and then we do post game. And during that practice, which I run like in the first half, I'll work on stuff that we'll work on offense and defense, whatever. But I give them 5 timeouts. I give them 3 fulls and two 30s, and then they can use them whenever they want.
I love that.
And it works. It's like it breaks up the monotony of practice a little bit sometimes. And sometimes I'll even have them run out and do our warm up we do before a game. It's like, we're going to have practice today, but here's how we're going to do it. It's just a unique way to kind of like, what is coach crazy? It's like, well, no, we're still going to do the same stuff. It's just how I'm breaking it up. You know, it's like giving them a little different twist. But I love the timeout thing.
You got to be creative. You know, I think that college basketball season especially is almost 5 months on the court, 4 months on the court. So you got to be creative in how your ways. I mean, you know, we've got a ton of different things that we've done over the course of time that I've seen other coaches do, different, refocus things, competitive things, or whether it's something like lighthearted, but we certainly do a lot to re-engage, because there's a lot to learn every day.
It's crazy.
And as a team.
All right. Anything else? I have a bunch of questions for you too. So if you have
time. That pretty much covers what our, basic, everything looks like pretty much. I'm happy to, answer some questions for sure.
Okay. So what do you think the biggest change you've seen in the game is?
In the game?
Yeah.
Well, I think
Or with players. Doesn't matter.
I think that the biggest change in the game that I've seen over the course of my career is I think everybody will say this, so I'm not going to touch on how the generation is different and how the kids are different. I think that's an easy one.
Yeah.
I think the use of perimeter play and the focus on perimeter play has certainly become bigger. And for different coaches, that style of play is great. But I think that at the high school levels where you don't have not every coach has a strategy, you'll see some players who will come into our gym and their coach has let them jack up threes and they're not even a 20% shooter.
Right.
And I'm like, well, what are you – you just took that shot 8 times in practice. You haven't made one. Well, that's coach tells me to shoot it all the time. Well, coach isn't here anymore.
Right.
You need to go to the basket. And I think the good coaches always preach it, but the whole shoot your way out, like that's what I tell my kids. If you're in a slump, shoot your way out.
Right.
Go to the rack, get a layup. Can't get a layup, get a foul, hold the ball at the foul line for a couple seconds, enjoy that feeling of having the basketball, take a free throw. Take another one, get a little rhythm to what you're doing. So I think the perimeter game at the lower levels has become like high school and middle school has become like, just jack them up. And I think that has affected some players coming in who maybe they're hoisting shots up from their waist or their shot form is they haven't nailed down the mid range or don't even have a left hand, but they can shoot free.
Well, yeah. And the loss of the mid range, I think the loss of the mid range is going to swing back. To be honest with you, I tell my son, I said, everyone's going to the rim and everyone's shooting threes. I said, if you get a mid range, you will get open shots because people are giving those. I mean, but it has to be like you're shooting a layup. I mean, it has to be like you're hitting it 60% of the time. But if you work on that part of the game, it's just lost. It's like, when you watch like The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, he's shooting mid-rangers a lot, and he's – you know what he's doing? Watch. I went back and watched some of his old games. He used the backboard a lot.
Yeah, 100%.
A lot.
I mean, I tell my point guard all the time, like, watch Mike Bibby. Guy made a living from mid-range, hitting mid-range shots as a point guard. And I know that right now it's, a little bit of lost art. I know that some of our guards will come in and they'll take like a 12-foot floater or – something ridiculous, and I'm like, why not just pull up and shoot the mid-range? And it's because they're not comfortable with the shot. So that's why in our 5-minute shooting and in a lot of our shooting drills, we'll take one dribble pull-up, two dribble pull-up, that mid-range shot, because that, in my opinion, that is a huge part of the game.
It is. If you could do one offense or one defense, what would you do?
Well, I mean, I've always kind of been the same coach my whole time. So offensively, we're a ball screen offense team, and defensively, we have always been, a man to man. That's just kind of how I am.
Okay. How do you defend ball screens?
So I like to tell my players that whatever we're doing as a team. A lot of them like to debate. Well, I could have gotten over. I could have gotten under. So we pretty much do the same thing. We're going over as much as we possibly can. Obviously, if it's a really great shooter, we're trying to lock and trail. And then on the other end, if depending on the situation and who we're playing, I've been trying to teach icing the ball screens, because I'm getting higher level players right now. So icing is not easy, and it certainly leaves a lot up for error. But I have some very athletic guards and posts that can do that sort of thing. So we have been icing those screens a little bit, which has helped us prevent getting switched into all sorts of bad situations.
Yeah, and the switch isn't as big a deal at the high school level, I don't think. It's right. First of all, because half of them can't post-pass, so it doesn't really matter. So you're sitting in a gym in July watching a summer AAU tournament with 8 billion kids. First of all, I don't know how you guys do it, to be honest with you, because everyone can pick out the top kid, like in tryouts. I can pick out the top kid. Michael Jordan walks in, I can pick out him. I can even pick out the top 10 kids. But after that, it seems like noise to me. Like, because you're not getting the top kid because the top kid's getting a D2 or D1 offer probably.
Right.
So you have to work your way down. That's what I don't know how you do it. It's like, it looks like all those 7 kids all look the same. So my question to you is, what do you look for in a recruit?
Well, I think there's a few things. Like, generically, what do we look for? Generically, I want to see, how do you interact with your teammates? You know, someone always told me, watch how they interact with their parents. If they'll talk to their parents one way, you won't be surprised if they talk to you that way in practice when they come play for you. You know, what is their body language like in warmups? You know, are their headphones off and they're warming up with the team, or do they have AirPods on or Beats on and they're warming up with their team, but they can't hear anything going on around them? You know, do they jog into timeouts? All that kind of stuff. Body language is extremely important for us. And, you know, how many possessions do they take off? That I'm always curious to watch. Like, is she just going to take off this possession and not get back because she needs a break? Or is she going to, you know, get a sub, come back and not take off any possessions? So those are, you know, some of the fundamental basic things. But when I really look specifically, I'm looking to see defensively, can you keep your position in front? Like, if I bring you in, can you guard, you know, 1, 2, 3 in my league, if that's your position, or if you're a post, can you guard 4 and 5? So I watch that very carefully. Can you keep the ball in front of you? You know, are you able to, obviously, like we just talked about, are you able to switch screens? Are you able to go under? Do you fight over? You know, do you recognize, you know, the type of player you're playing against and learn from your mistakes? So, okay, you go under and she steps back and hits a 3 2 times on you. So what should your next move be? It probably should not be to drop under the screen. So I look for that IQ stuff. And then I also am very careful about, I don't think you need to have the perfect shot form. A lot of coaches will tell you, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Everybody shoots the ball differently.
Jamal Wilkes used to shoot this way, but the perfect – here's what I tell – this is the math teacher in me. The perfect form will allow you to take less shots to perfect it. The bad form is just going to take you more time. I mean, you got the worst form in the world. If you sit and shoot 8 hours a day for 7 years, you're going to be able to shoot, but it's going to take you longer. So form is – like my son, I said this in a podcast. When he was younger, he had a little dip. You know, he'd get the ball, he'd dip, and then he'd shoot. Well, you know, I left it because he wasn't strong enough. And then I think it was between his freshman and sophomore year. It's like, all right, we got to break this whole thing down, because you're just not going to be able to get the shot off at the next level, because you're just giving the defense too much time. So we had to tweak it. But it wasn't like – I didn't – like, elbow has to be – like, I don't care if his elbow's out a little bit. You know, all that stuff. I think people worry about that too much sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, we can correct a lot of it in practice on a shooting machine and a shooting drill, and we can change some of the stuff, you know, backspin on the ball or shot arc. We can be as specific as we want. So I'm just looking to see, can you get a shot up? You know, are you taking smart shots? And can you defend to your position? And
then I think – I'm telling you, that is the difference between a really good D3 player and a D1 player. Like, the D1 player, like, you know, you better be able to keep – you got to be able to defend – it's like the NBA. You got to – I got to be able to defend – you got to – I got to be able to defend you. Like, I got to be able to stop you. Yes, we got to do help side. We got to do all our man defensive. I mean, shoot, I'm in Wisconsin. Everyone knows pack line. Shoot.
Right. So,
It originated here with the Bennetts and the Bo Ryan. So don't worry about pack line. So, but you better be able to keep that person in front of you. And that, I think that's what parents don't really understand sometimes too. Your son or daughter is really good, but they can't defend at that level. If they can't defend at that level, they can't play. Because you're not going to gimmick. Coach K ain't going to gimmick Roy Williams. They're not going to gimmick each other.
Right. You're always trying to find a way. You know, we're all coaches are always running, you know, whether it's complex or simple offenses, to kind of try and ways to free up their better players. So you need to be able to find a way to read situations and lock down to be able to be an effective player at the next level. And then I think consistency, that is a big deal for me. Are you consistent? And it comes in a lot of layers. Are you a consistent shooter, or can you be a consistent shooter? Are you a consistent defender? Are you consistent in your hustle? Because I always tell my kids, if you're inconsistent, number one, it's bad habits, and inconsistency leads to those bad habits. But also, it's an indicator that you've got a lot of work to do to, you know, break those things and become a better player. Like, my point guard shooting, you know, 20% is not consistent enough. She's got to be a higher percentage shooter. And, you know, we work on that, and she's done an excellent job of fixing that scenario and improving. And, you know, I'm not asking a kid to come in as a 40%, you know, in the post. No, not by all means, not at, you know, not where we are, but I am asking them to that to be a goal of theirs, to work on being more consistent. So.
And I don't know if you agree with this, but I think everybody can be a shooter. I'm not sure everyone can be a scorer. Like, everyone can get on, you can get on a machine and you can become a shooter. Like, if you take enough shots, you can become a shooter. It doesn't mean you're going to get the shot off. It doesn't mean that you're going to be able to be a scorer. But most kids can become shooters if they put the time in my opinion, especially with the machine right now.
I think kids can learn how to shoot better. I think they can improve their shooting, but I think when it comes down to it, you know, the better shooters with the quick release and the form, those are really who are the ones that rise above and are consistent.
Oh, they're unique. They are definitely unique. Yeah. So what do you consider your strength and your weaknesses as a coach?
I think strengths as a coach, you know, one of the things is organization and, you know, attention to detail. You know, I watch a lot of film on ourselves. I watch a lot of film on our opponents, more so on ourselves, just because we're at the junior college level and I need to understand what I can do to perfect our players and everything like that. But I also do like to watch a lot of other film to prepare us to win. And I think, you know, offensively, I've always been a great offensive coach in teaching kind of how to improve your offense. And like I spoke about, consistency. Areas that I'd like to improve, I've always been a pressing guy. So, you know, during this quarantine, I have spent hours and hours and hours on, you know, working with different coaches at different levels on specific presses that I've run. I'm a big ball screen offense guy. So I spent time working with some of the coaches at different divisions.
What presses?
So I'm big on 1-2-2, 2-2-1. Those are the two that I like to see. At least I find as a stall.
And then you fall back to man then?
We do both. We'll fall back to man, or depending on who we're playing, if we have to, we'll go into a zone, a matchup zone, or something like that.
So, are your players tend to be long and athletic?
I wouldn't say long. I mean, we didn't have any height our first year, so but we have very aggressive and athletic defenders.
Have
so
you the 1-3-1?
We do, but it leaves too much open in the corner. And in our league, you've got some very, very, very talented shooters who, you know, will just make you pay too quickly. So, and I don't like, you know, with our limited height, I try not to isolate.
Yeah, you got to have a little length.
Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe, like, jump up and down, review, do whatever you got to do. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great
Sports Social Podcast Network.